All right. Welcome everybody to the Solid Waste Advisory Commission meeting for Thursday, May 6th. We've got a pretty packed agenda. It's dense. So hopefully you've had a chance to take a look, at least scan some of the preliminary documentation that Amber sent out. We will kind of crank through a lot of this stuff, especially really focusing on that regional system study. Will be a lengthy part of the presentation, but really important, and as well as some updates from the outreach side, and just a quick check-in on the system for just to give everybody a preview of what we're going to be talking about during the system study, as well as some future tours and presentations from things. So that being said, I am going to hand it over to Kyle to roll through the agenda.
Alrighty, welcome everybody. Let's do a quick roll call. Tim is here. It sounded like he just checked in. Alan, I saw, was here. Simone here as well. Rich, Jason, Joe, and it looks like the only member we are missing is, I haven't seen Derek yet sign in, so hopefully he.
I'm here.
Okay, hi Derek. Alright, welcome. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from our February 4th meeting?
Rich will move to approve.
I'll second.
All right. And we got a second. Okay.
Can I ask one favor?
Go ahead.
I forget what some of these abbreviations are that we talked about 3 months ago. So if some of those could just be spelled out, I'd be grateful.
On the agenda?
No, on the meeting minutes.
Oh, pretty.
I can't remember what DEI is and some of this stuff.
Okay, we'll try to reduce abbreviations in the meeting minutes going forward. Let me get back to our agenda. What do we have up first? It looks like up first we have updates from Clark County Public Health Solid Waste Program. Travis, I'm guessing that's you.
Yeah. Most of the updates we're going to be talking about. Everything else, we've been trying to get all of the updates around our outreach, education, and operations efforts out to everybody in advance. So just give everybody a chance to look through the summary that everybody on our team provides some inputs. So this month, Amber pulled everything together and sent all of that out. Otherwise, I'll yield the rest of our time since you have that information, and a lot of the updates will be covered in some of the presentations for today. So I'm seeing Jason in the chat wants to know, did we actually approve the minutes? And I think yes was a point of clarification from Tim for future abbreviation explanations. Is that correct?
That's what I took from it. Is that okay with everybody else? Anyone object to that?
Great. So I will turn it back over to you, Kyle.
Okay. Next up, we have solid waste enforcement.
Thank you, Kyle. Hello, everyone. Quarter one for this year, the report was in minutes, but nothing major to go over there. I just want to note that we are still scheduling our site visits instead of doing unannounced. We met all of our expected visits. We didn't have any new applications, although we did have a couple inquiries come in for new solid waste handling facilities. One of those is Washington State Department of Transportation is looking at a new decant facility. We don't have the actual application. They were just asking questions, but it sounds like this one does plan on submitting an application this year. The location they have is three parcels right where I-5 and 205 meet. The southern tip right there is kind of a triangle. And again, it's going to be a decant facility similar to what Watley Pit currently is, the upper yard. And the other interest is one that we're not sure if it's quite as if it's going to move forward as fast, but it's by Waste Express, and they're looking at a transfer station. They don't have any property. They were just asking questions about what would be needed and the steps for that. So that's kind of exciting to see those come through. If and when they do, we'll bring those to SWAC to review. The other update I have is regarding our grant. The grant cycle is going to open soon, and we'll be reapplying for the LaSWIFA funds for enforcement. Good news, there's a little bit more money on the table, so we're hoping to get a little closer to full cost recovery on that program. Right now, solid waste enforcement currently spends out in about the sixth quarter, and so with a little additional money, we're hoping to get a little closer to be fully funded with that. And with Whatley Pit, I think I promised you guys I would give everybody an update every time we meet on just what's happening with Whatley. For the lower yard, the one where there's illegal dumping happening, the RFP for the Public Works Department closed on April 14th to get a consultant to do the testing and sampling out there and work with the voluntary cleanup program with Ecology. At this point, I think I mentioned this last time, Public Works has exhausted the allowable hours from Ecology for support. So anything additional is about $350 an hour if they have questions. So we have some staff, some folks on our staff who are familiar with the voluntary cleanup program and have offered to review the sample collection methodology that they're going to put forward to try and save them a little bit of money and come up with a more revised plan. We haven't heard from them. We haven't heard if they've closed or decided on a consultant just yet, but we're hoping to hear that any day, and I'm hoping to update you next time on who that consultant is. And also, I think I mentioned last time Public Works was moving forward with approving a contract with a company called Restoracle that looks at old insurance company money and tries to find old insurance policies that can be called on for historic contamination. The company, we've worked with him, some of our staff have worked with Ben with Restoracle, and just talking with him, he's confident that he can find money in the county at multiple county-owned properties, but one of the sites he's looking at is Whatley Pit to see if there's money available for that to support the cleanup and sampling. So that's pretty exciting as well. And then the upper yard, we were sampling the bioswale to find out what kind of impact the swale was having. The material is stored in the upper yard, is flowing into the bioswale, and we had concerns of contamination flowing out of it. So we're working with Clark County Public Works Clean Water Department to analyze the samples that are, the results that are coming from that. The first set of samples that came back, nothing really that alarming on anybody's fronts. We're going to do two more sampling events throughout the year and then look at everything as a whole, and I will keep you guys apprised of that as we have information come back. Those are the updates for enforcement. Is there any questions?
No.
Okay.
Thanks, Brian. I'm glad to see we're moving forward on the Whatley Pit and making some progress there. Next up, we have City of Vancouver, and I believe I saw Julie here. Julie, are you here?
I am here. Can everyone hear me? Okay. Good evening. It's nice to see you all. A few updates for you. I'll start with one that we're very excited for. Is the City of Vancouver has hired and our new Public Works Director has started. Her name is Jennifer Belknap Williamson. She brings a wealth of over 20 years of experience in the private and public sector, most notably Port of Portland, City of Portland, and then consulting with some colleagues who are familiar with our regional system study as well. So we're excited for her vision and her leadership of our team and our department. But to the news of our programs and services, our spring coupon program, which is an annual benefit to City of Vancouver residents with active garbage service, it has started. It started April, and we've extended it one additional month running through July. This program is a coupon program where residents receive two yard debris coupons and one tire coupon. Part of a benefit of having active service in the City of Vancouver to help them address vegetation and seasonal debris that accumulates, as well as tires, which we all have and need to get rid of. And then pictured here, featuring so that you can have context, the City of Vancouver traditionally operates a neighborhood cleanup program in partnership with Waste Connections and our 60-plus neighborhood associations that span across the full City of Vancouver. And while we couldn't do those last year, again, out of precaution and in guidance with COVID precautions, we've continued a curbside option, which pictured here is a resident taking advantage of this free benefit for them, set out of up to 5 items at no additional cost to the resident on a predetermined scheduled day where they coordinate to submit a request to have their items picked up at the curb, contactless bulky item pickup. And that is underway. It began in March and runs through the rest of the year, likely to conclude in late October. And it's performing well and meeting many needs for our community at this time. And then if you want to learn more, I can drop the webpage link in the conversation as well, so you have that for a frame of reference. And the last update, Kyle, last month you had, or last meeting, you had asked about our climate strategies, and I had mentioned there would be a May workshop. But after a council workshop with staff that are leading that effort, that workshop is postponed until July. The last meeting and conversations have been about moving beyond strategy development and working towards actions with the consultants that the staff are working with. So we anticipate the next climate workshop again being in July, if anyone wishes to track that. Our Be Heard Vancouver website has a wonderful webpage with information and links and resources to stay in touch. That's Be Heard Vancouver. With that, that's all I had today, unless there are questions for Vancouver. All right. Thank you. Have a good meeting.
Okay. Next up, we got Waste Connections, and I'll turn over to Derek.
Yeah, thank you. So just a couple updates, our collection side of the business, kind of the main points going on there. You know, labor shortages throughout the county that you guys have seen in the headlines of the news have certainly impacted us, made it a challenge for us to fulfill routes on a daily basis, but we're continuing to kind of chuck and jive and make our way through that. But there is a significant labor issue in the county right now that's making it a challenge for us. And then we've also had, off and on, we're tracking a half dozen COVID cases or exposures amongst our staff, and trying to keep everybody safe at the sites and keep the public safe as well. Our transfer stations have actually done quite well in the last 8 months or so. Very few cases on that end, but our collection side seems to have had some challenges. So we're pushing hard on our staff to move forward on vaccinations, but there certainly seems to be a fairly decent hesitation to do that. So we're at about maybe 15 to 20% of our staff getting vaccinated right now, and we're making a push to try and get that raised. Julie talked about the neighborhood cleanup program that's going well. On the post-collection side, so since we last talked, we went through the annual lock closure. The dams on the Columbia River closed down for between 3 weeks and up to an 8 week closure every year. And this was a short closure. Everything went pretty well. We have to truck everything instead of barge everything for that period of time. They threw in a kicker with doing some extra work of another week or two. And everything went really well on that end. Our operations manager, Brian Trepto, manages the project for us, and he did a great job. So no issues on that end. We are still seeing record volumes of tonnage at the transfer stations. We did just over 13,000 non-route tons, so small haulers, general public loads, all that. We did 13,000 tons in the month of April, and that's the first time we've ever broken 13,000 tons in a month. So it was a very busy month for us. It was a 25% increase over our last best April. And I think total tons were going to come into about 36,000 tons, which is not quite a record, but the dry weather had a significant impact on that. So if it had rained a normal amount of April weather, our tonnage would have been up significantly as well. So business is booming in Clark County, and people are still coming to the transfer stations quite a bit. We began re-began construction at Central Transfer on the entryway. So we're working to redesign that entryway and build a turnout lane for customers to try and reduce the traffic issues out on Highway 503. It's not going to solve the issue, and that won't be solved until we can get more traffic into the facility with some redesign work, but it will provide a little bit of a turnout lane for customers so they're not going, 50 miles an hour down that highway and having collisions is the hope there. We ran into a slight snag. It started Monday, and by Wednesday, they'd already identified that there was water pipe issues on the project, that we're just going to push it back a month. So we were expecting it to be done by mid-June. I would imagine we'll be done by mid-July now at this point. We have Paint Care we're still working on. That's the state program where the paint producers essentially fund the disposal of paint. That has been in the works. It was supposed to be in effect on April 1st. Our council is working with a working with Paint Care's council on coming up with a statewide agreement that will help us navigate that. It doesn't change the service level necessarily. It just adds some additional, disposal components as far as cost structure and all that. So we're still working on getting that done. And then the last thing would be we have an electric truck coming that we've talked about, a fully electric truck, one of only two that are going to be delivered in the country at this point. It's had some delays because of some of the novelties of the engineering. They're working through some of the kinks. We're expecting to have that on site any day now, so the next week or two. We should have that here, and we're not going to put it right into service. But we'll kind of test it out. We've got some, obviously, some hesitation about putting it out on a regular route, but it'll be great to have that vehicle on site. It will be fully electric. There's a couple that are hybrids already in action where the body is still an old hydraulic system, and then the truck cab itself is electric, and this one will be just 100% electric. So that's all I got.
How long can you run that truck before you run out of power? Man, you're using a lot of juice if you're powering everything with it.
Yeah. They originally found out there was issues with somebody's got a little paint. They had that was one of the problems they had with this hybrid truck, and just trying to get the balance right. But they believe it'll have more than enough power to get through a full service day. That's certainly our concern, is having it break down essentially out on route. But we've been assured that it should be fine. So.
And also, as a SWAC member, when you signed on, you did agree to let them charge their truck at your house when they drive by. So all SWAC members need to make sure they have an outbound available to you.
Have your cord out front, please.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll have that little brown extension cord running over. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Derek. That'll be cool, hopefully, to see that truck on the road at some point. So. Next up, we have the Contamination Reduction and Outreach Plan.
Hey, Kyle, before we, not to give Tina just a few more seconds, but Jason, I don't know if I saw in the chat, but Jason did bring up that just because this is a recorded public meeting, I did forget that there is a vote necessary once a motion and a second is done. So you might want to just real quick, just go back and get a yay nay vote on the minutes, just so we have that on record as something that we need to have accomplished. So sorry about that.
No problem. Thanks for keeping on the straight and narrow. Let's have a yay-nay vote on the proposed meeting minutes. What's the best way to do it on Zoom? Is there a way to raise our hands, I think? If everyone can raise their hands for a yay vote. And any nay votes out there? All right, I'm not seeing any. There we go. Yays have it. Meeting minutes approved. Thanks, Jason, for keeping me in line. Is Tina ready now, or are we?
Hi, everyone. So I'm the Green Neighbors Program lead that oversees residential recycling, waste reduction, and other sustainability programs, and I've been tasked with the contamination reduction and outreach plan for the county. So you all had received the memo and attachments, so I'll just read a short excerpt from the memo, and then we could cover questions, if any, and then move into a vote. So, Clark County is required by the Department of Ecology to develop a contamination reduction and outreach plan, or CROP, to either amend into our current solid waste management plan, further referred to as plan, or include in the plan update by July 1st, 2021. to line up this process with the upcoming plan update and allow time to evaluate the contamination reduction efforts we have already put in place. The crop will have to be amended into our existing 2015 plan. Three options are available to develop our crop. Option one being the full template in lieu. This option allows a local jurisdiction to include the complete template written by Ecology in their plan in lieu of creating their own. Option two is a customized template. If a jurisdiction chooses this option, they would choose only the action steps and strategies from the template that address their local needs and conditions. And then option three, developing a custom crop. And under this option, a jurisdiction would develop a fully customized set of action steps, data, or additional content tailored to meet their unique local needs, challenges, and opportunities. So due to time constraints and staffing changes, option one was chosen with the intention to go with option two or three when the plan update is underway. So staff is seeking SWAC's approval of the crop template developed by Ecology and to amend it into the 2015 plan. So, are there any questions?
Yeah, I got a couple of questions. So you also sent an actual, if I got this right, we also received a crop document that uses template one. Is that correct? Because it says here that you're looking for approval of use of a template, but it seems like it's already been done.
That is correct.
So what if we didn't approve it? You'd go back and rewrite it?
Yes, but the hope being that you will accept this template as our final.
Excellent. And then my second, and I understand that you need to be done by July 1 this year, right? So that's why you're doing it. Okay, so then the other part of this is with the intention to go to option 2 or 3 when the solid waste management plan is underway. The solid waste management plan is underway now. So you're going to take the document, the crop document that you've written using template 1, and you're going to revise it using templates 2 or 3 and incorporate it into the SWIMP solid waste management plan at a future time. Is that correct?
So to clarify, we will be...
Sorry.
So to clarify, we'll be updating the contamination reduction outreach plan to include all of the work that we are currently doing to reduce our waste and increase recycling. So we will replace that template, which was option one, with our customized list of strategies that we're currently doing or plan on doing in the next so odd years, 3 to 5 years, within the time frame of the solid waste management plan.
I noticed that they had four waste streams, but I did not see anything in there for glass.
That's a good question. I do not know the answer to that.
And currently we recycle or at least collect the glass separate, and there's no stream for that in the crop that I can see.
So if it's not mentioned in the template, that is certainly something we can include since we are recycling glass. But I believe that statewide with the template, trying to accommodate jurisdictions kind of small and large, that most certainly we can include that in our customized crop.
Yeah, so this the template is just, and you know what, Peter Lyon is on. I didn't actually expect to call on him or put him on the spot, but he is our department, one of our the Department of Ecology staff that's kind of taking the lead on this. So the template is not necessarily meant to reflect our specific system. It's just meant to address a planned requirement from the Department of Ecology so that we can develop the plan specifically with our county in mind. And the implementation of this template is to really just allow us more time to evaluate the contamination strategies that we currently have in place, and those include, you know, the card tagging and the way that we have our system set up right now, and allow us to, you know, evaluate and get some of those things in place and draft a template or a crop or a contamination reduction outreach plan more specific to our county. So, but Peter's here as well, so I don't know if Peter with Ecology, if you wanted to weigh in on anything here to help clarify that point.
No, I think you guys did a good job. I think Tina's right. The basic crop was written sort of the lowest common denominator. Many local programs don't include glass in their commingled recycling, so that's why it was left out of that. The idea was that, you know, if a county that has a more expanded program, they would tailor or customize that crop. But because of your unique circumstances and sort of being midstream of a plan development, Travis explained and Tina explained that you're going to sort of do this initial step to meet the legal requirement that the legislature put forth, and then you'll create a crop that makes perfect sense for your waste system in Clark County with the commitment of your solid waste management plans.
I had a question real quick. This is Joe Zimmerman, by the way. Question for Tina or Peter, whoever wants to field this question. The crop, the contaminant. Reduction outreach plan. What contaminants are we talking about here? Are we talking about contaminants to the landfill garbage? Or you piqued my interest there. Are we talking, you know, motor oil and latex paint and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, in this case, we're talking about contamination that we find in our recycling stream. So things that do not belong in the blue recycling cart, we see things like soda can containers or refrigerator and freezer, cardboard material, essentially garbage that gets put into our blue cart.
Okay, thanks for the clarification, and I apologize. I'm trying to teach my wife not to throw the pizza boxes in there.
This is Peter. I'd like to add, if it's okay, that this is, unfortunately, there's well-intended wishful recycling that occurs. Everything you buy pretty much has that recycling arrow on it, and I think a lot of people just don't know, and so they want it to be recyclable. It appears that it may be based on some of the information they've seen, so they put it in the recycling container. But the reality is, if you get too much, basically due to some restrictions on the facilities that receive your material, if the contamination rate becomes too high, they end up taking the entire load and they'll dump it into the landfill.
So, yeah, just one other piece, Joe, just to help people kind of focus in, because, again, I think just like with the acronyms, we use phrases and terms that on a daily basis that escape general vocabulary. So for the contaminants, we have a couple of data points too. So the cart taggers, so the recycling advocates that Waste Connections employs as part of our contamination plan, are collecting data on what they see. And then we do annual contamination studies of recycling. So when we are talking about contamination specifically, so it might be oil in the recycling bin, it might be car parts, it might be diapers. It's a lot of things, so we're really trying hard to prioritize the top contaminants and really highlight some of those areas that Peter was saying are just some biggest gaps in understanding around the recycling list and how to prepare those materials. And so, but we could also, Derek, we could send a recycling advocate to Joe Zimmerman's house specifically. I don't know if we do targeting, tagging.
Yeah, let me write that address down real quick. It'll be there tomorrow morning about 6:30.
Yeah, exactly. No, what you guys, I got to tell you, what you guys said just a second ago about, you know, wishful recycling, that's the honest to God's truth. Like I said, I love my wife to death, but she says, well, I don't see why I can't recycle those pizza boxes that are covered in grease and everything. And, yeah, that's exactly it. By the way, so I shouldn't have been putting my car batteries in the blue basket either.
We will also have our flaming truck that is on fire. We'll park it outside of your house and extract it later when you do that as well. You'll enjoy that too.
Yeah, guys, thank you for the clarification. That makes a ton of sense, and now I understand completely about what's going on. Great.
This does also give us a good chance to plug a couple of things. Our Green Neighbors website has a lot of information, Joe. We're not ganging up on your wife, but just to highlight for folks that if you too are having relationship struggles around recycling, our Green Neighbors website, Tim, I know that you have at least taken the Recycle U 101 and 201 classes that the city offers, and our Master Composter Recycler program also offers quite a bit of training. I think there's just one whole four-hour class dedicated to pizza boxes, if I'm correct. But yeah, so just to remind everybody on the Slack, a whole lot of resources. So if you need to, when I was doing outreach at the fair, or in the public, I would say 50% of the interactions I had were solving facts in households. So just good information to arm yourself with. So thank you. Those were great questions, though.
Complicated enough, you need all those classes.
I had a quick question or clarification, I guess. So the memo says that the SWAC approval is needed, and we typically do more recommendations for staff or for the commission or the manager. Is that, do we actually approve or do we make a recommendation on this?
Yeah, I have the same question, because legally you really don't have any choice at this point. It's not like we're deciding to do one thing or another. You've got to do it, right? Or you're out of compliance.
So from Ecology's requiring the county to run these by a SWAC, and Rich is correct, our interpretation, and the county can have their own and go further than the state, but from our perspective, we need the SWAC to make a recommendation for, usually the recommendation is to the county commissioners to make a vote or approval, but in this case, Ecology is satisfied with just a recommendation from the SWAC to submit this to Ecology.
So I think the update of the solid waste management plan does require some, we have to run it up the leadership ladder to get approval, and they will want to know that we have the support, or at least in general support, knowing the time crunch that we're in and the goal of developing a crop more specific to Clark County in this next solid waste management plan update. They will want to know that we did speak with the advisory commission and that they gave us a majority support. And again, if you said no, you know, we would be back at the drawing board tomorrow coming up with a very specific crop. But we're asking for a recommend. We're basically asking for permission to go ahead and do this, and starting with our advisory commission.
Well, if it's okay, I'll make a recommendation. I'll move that we make a recommendation in support of doing this using the crop template. And I'm not sure if it's possible to put in kind of that a footnote that glass is collected separate from the blue cart in our system, and that really the focus of the crop is on the commingled material.
I'll second that.
Now, Jason, what comes next?
The vote. Let me unmute myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Still carries.
Thanks for your help, Jason. Much appreciated. You nailed that one.
Thank you, everyone.
Yep. Do you have anything else to add, Tina? Are you satisfied?
Nope. That is wonderful.
Okay. I believe, Travis, you were going to do a solid waste system refresher. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes. So I just want to highlight real quick, too, we have a lot of people in attendance. We won't do broad introductions, but we do have some folks from Ecology. I don't think we need to do formal introductions, but Olivia, and I want to make sure if she can help me pronounce her name, but I believe it's Karos. is our new SLAC representative that will be partnering with us on our solid waste management plan update process, as well as our application and management of the local solid waste financial assistance grant. And I believe it is the intention to have her attend as an ecology representative throughout the plan update process, as well as just sitting in on our SLAC meetings to for situational awareness and assistance in planning. So if you see that name, she will be in attendance, and I think this is her very first week, so we got in early as far as getting a Clark County, building a relationship with Olivia there for Clark County. So welcome, Olivia. And then just also, we have a lot of Clark County and City of Vancouver staff listening in just to get updates on the regional system study. So just wanted to put that out there. The reason we have so many folks is just a big topic and a lot of people wanting to listen in and provide support for what we do moving forward. So had a meeting with Kyle and Tim a few weeks ago or last week. And we've talked a lot at length about tours, special presentations, ways that we can bring SLAC members more up to speed or greater depth of understanding related to parts of our system. And one of the topics that came up was this idea of we've spent a lot of time really focusing on very small parts of the system, and to kind of step back, look at a broad overview of the system, would both be beneficial in helping us identify areas where we would like to do some tours now that, you know, things are opening back up and there might be more opportunities to tour some of the facilities that are part of our system and engage with them a little bit more. But also this felt like a good opportunity just to give everybody a map in their head to reference what Doug is going to be talking about related to the regional system study. And this will also give us a chance to make sure, I think we've eliminated the, it's something I try to do, so I'm glad Tim brought it up earlier, but eliminate some of the acronyms and make sure that the names are spelled out so that when we're talking about stuff, you will be familiar with the system that we're talking about. So just, I'm going to share my screen. This is a system map that Kaylee had helped me put together. Kaylee was our program tech that left to go work with Parks. Last year, but she put this together for a legislative tour we had at a recycling center. So I'm going to share that just as a way to guide this conversation. It's a little overly simplified, but if I can just get a thumbs up, are you all able to see just a map with a bunch of arrows? Okay. So I'm going to probably just spend 5 or 10 minutes going over this. I will send this map out later to everybody to have as a reference. But this is just a really basic map of what happens to our waste and recycling once it is set up at your curb or, you know, once it leaves your residence. Obviously, this is not all-encompassing. There's a lot of details that aren't on there, but just keep in mind this was built for a 10-minute conversation with a legislator who was probably also taking phone calls and emails at the same time. So, this is just a starting point for us, and we can dig into some things in the future if we'd like. So just starting on the left side, you know, for the sake of this map, our customer base is broken down into three groups. We have residents and businesses. We break out schools because we have a special school program that works with schools. And there's also some nuances in how the recycling gets completed. There's some contracts. So just for the sake of explaining our schools program and highlighting that part of our outreach and education, we broke that in there. So from residents, it largely depends on where you are. So if you follow the several gray lines, there's lots of ways that your garbage, well, there's multiple ways your garbage can leave your house. Self-haul can be taken to any of the three transfer stations, and I want to highlight that one because it's definitely something we're going to be talking about during the J.R. Miller report. Curbside service is available throughout the county for recycling and garbage. It is not mandatory everywhere, but it is available to everybody. And then that little arrow off the left just highlights the fact that part of our system is split. So for residents of Camas and Washougal, And Derek, if you want to jump in here and correct anything or provide any additional details, please let me know. But certain geographical locations in the eastern part of the county go to the Washougal transfer station. So there is a little bit of a split in how some of our waste reaches its final destination. So for, and this one just says City of Camas, but I believe it's Washougal Waste as well. Derek, could you expand on, no? Could you expand on the
waste? Just the City of Camas. That's right.
Just the City of Camas.
We do the collection in Washougal.
Okay, so just the City of Camas goes to the Washougal transfer station as well as Self Hall. I know we made several trips there myself after moving into the house out here. So for all garbage, whether it's Self Hall or curbside collection, outside the City of Camas, it's taken to either the Central Transfer and Recycling Center that's located on 503, just south of Battleground by Prairie High School, or it is taken to the West Bend Material Recovery Center that's located out on the Port of Vancouver, west of Vancouver. That material, that garbage, is transported by barge up to Findlay Buttes Landfill in Boardman, Oregon. So, I think we've brought it up or talked about it before, but there is sort of a video that just has a barge going up the river. So it's, you know, going up the river, going through the locks, heads up to Findlay Buttes. And at any given time, there is quite a bit of barge traffic. Barge locations with our containers or Waste Connections or Tidewater's containers between here and Boardman. I mean, if you'll remember, a couple of years ago, I don't know how many members of SWAC were here, but when we had the fire in the gorge was shut down. We had the trouble of some barges being trapped on one side of the closure and other barges full of garbage trapped on the other side and had a container problem. So, but for the most part, that's a pretty good system. The material that comes from the Washougal Transfer Station is transported by truck to the Wasco County Landfill that's located just south of the Dalles. Our recycling material follows a similar path. However, they are not sent to the landfill. I am going to put Derek a little bit on the spot here, but all of the material that is either self-hauled or collected at the curbside is marketed out to producers that use that as raw material in some form or another, either repurpose it, recycle it, but in other ways it's an alternative to the landfill. And I know it's kind of changed. I think, Derek, a lot of our stuff is going domestically right now. A lot of the recyclable materials are domestic, but I wanted to see if you could expand on that just real quick.
Yeah, you know, up until the China sword issues, a lot of our mixed paper did go international, and since that time, most everything is going domestic to, mostly to Northwest Mills at this point. We're fortunate to have that access. But we go to mills like NORPAC up in Longview. Some stuff goes out to Wenatchee, Spokane. A lot of the area mills takes the bulk of our material. I think some of the aluminum may go a little further away, but any of the fiber does stay local.
So that's just the general. These are the big pieces of our system related to garbage and recycling. Thank you, Derek, for adding that. Obviously, what's left off here is a lot of our special waste programs or non-curbside materials. Paint has a system that right now is connected to paint stores that take that paint back and is a self-haul and then collected and taken to a processor process. Our hazardous waste facilities are not on here. Those are also similarly a self-haul to the transfer station process, and then there is a processor that takes that afterwards. Organics, both yard waste and food waste collection are not included on here right now. I would say the system, the facilities are still the same. However, we would add dirt huggers to the processing facility out in Dallesport. So that material is trucked out to a composting facility out in Dallesport. So there's some very specific parts of our system that were not on here. But this was just the starting point, just to give people some ideas of where you might want to. Oh, also not on here is the what was the place that was taking bodies for remains, Brian? What was that place called?
Recompose.
Not on here is Recompose, but also, again, elected officials, so we may put that on a later one. But so this, again, doesn't cover everything, but this is just a high-level look. That being said, I just want to give folks a couple of minutes. I don't want to go into a tremendous amount of detail on any one aspect of the system, but what I would like to hear from folks, especially to allow time for J.R. Miller to give their presentation, is what areas do you feel like you, and you can either in the chat, you can email me separately, or you can talk about it, but what areas do you really want to dig in a little bit more as far as Slack understanding? And is there anything on this map that you really would like to understand or experience or have greater detail presented or tour any of those facilities? So I'm going to turn it over to Slack members to provide some questions and direction on how we can catch you up to speed on certain parts of our system that maybe we haven't talked about enough as a group.
Travis, one thing I see that's not on your map here, you intimated that you could self-auto all three of the collection sites now, right?
Correct.
Okay, because that doesn't show here, but that's...
Yeah, that was an artistic decision to limit the number of arrows.
Right.
So that is, you are correct. It can go to all three. It just so happens that that house, Alan, is just closest to Central. So.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, that was just an artistic to limit the number of arrows. But that's a good point. Thank you for that clarification, Alan.
One thing, Travis, I would like to get a little more background on is just how the MRFs operate themselves in terms of sorting and all that sort of process that happens there. So that would be one thing I would be interested in knowing more about.
Okay. Yeah, I think a MRF tour is always a really great opportunity and a really eye-opening experience, and I'm sure that's something we can set up. Thank you, Kyle.
Hey, Travis, the diagram seems to say that Central Transfer only takes self-haul?
That's what I just clarified.
Okay, yeah, no, it's...
I think my question is a little different than yours, Alan.
Okay.
It's, yeah, sort of the inverse. So, again, that was just an arrow decision. All three transfer stations kind of operate, but...
self-haul.
But, yeah, you can take self-haul to all three, which was Alan's question. Tim's question... no, route trucks, so that little blue Waste Connections truck, yeah. Again, just to limit arrows, would also go to Central Transfer Station as well. So
and it can go to Washougal as well.
Yes.
And Washougal does not take any recyclables? Okay, so bins
I got a drop-off, so.
You can self-haul to Washougal. See, the legislators didn't look this closely at the map. They didn't take this time. You guys are finding all my missing arrows. So yeah,
like Travis said, you know, I think it's a simplified version of it. And, you know, all three transfer stations take, you know, drop-off garbage, drop-off recycling, drop-off household hazardous waste, metals, all sorts of different things. And it's just probably a little too complex to get this 100% correct. So it's more of a overall reflection of how the system works.
Yeah, understood. I picked on the Central Transfer Station specifically because of the traffic issues there.
And everybody does. I would.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, it was funny. I was thinking, that's fine. I was looking at it. Actually, Tina was kind enough to go over this with me beforehand, and I was thinking it'll be good that Stealth Haul only goes to Central because it'll really emphasize the fact that we're really going to be talking about Stealth Haul to Central, but I didn't really think about the fact that that truck could go other places. So that's a good point. So thank you. All right, so I've got the MRF. I've got just in general improved the arrow situation on this map for future use, which is good feedback. Go ahead throughout the meeting. I'm going to send this out. We'll check in. We're trying to set up meetings with the chairs a month in advance just to get some agenda topics and really give ourselves a little bit more time to plan these types of tours and presentations. It sounds like a MRF tour or it's a MRF presentation at an upcoming meeting would be very helpful and probably be very timely in helping prepare for the solid waste management plan updates and the contamination reduction outreach plan so you can have a little bit more understanding of what is actually, what contamination looks like. I also don't know, Derek, we're going to be doing the contamination audit. So we typically annually, Kim had been facilitating an audit of our recyclables and really pulling out all the contamination and evaluating it by what is the most frequent contamination and then getting a sense of what it actually looks like. So plastic bags, diapers, so literally hand sorting through our recyclables to pull out contamination, weighing them and getting percentages. This year, because Kim is gone and the consultant that had done it previously is unavailable, Derek and his team will be taking on that charge, but we will be looking for some folks to potentially come and help out if you're interested, but we will do some photographing and capturing some information, but that's always a really good way. There's one thing to say that there's contaminants. It's another thing to actually get to see what they look like when they're in there, because it tells a different story. So rather than just show you the reports, we can pull together some opportunities if anybody would like. I'll try to sell it as a potential. I don't know what a volunteer, what Slack members volunteering would look like from a risk standpoint, but it is I used to do waste audits for garbage up in Pierce County, and it is a fascinating way. It's sort of an anthropology dig, if you will, but with instead of people that lived hundreds of years ago, it's the people that live around you now and what they're putting in their recycling bin and what it looks like. You see some crazy stuff in there.
I've done that before. The last time, one of the last times they did it, I was able to do it with him. And if Derek's going to have a screw do it, I'll come wade through it again with it.
Great, yeah. We take anything. I think Josie's working on putting together a plan right now and got a pretty good idea of headcount needs. And we'd entertain any kind of volunteer opportunities people want to put forth. It'll be done probably on a Saturday. Because we have the most space on the tip floor at that time, and it is a pretty interesting process to see what people think of recycling. So,
and just point of clarification, you will not be required to participate in the sort to get a MRF tour. Those are not mutually exclusive things, so they will be separated out. But you might get free donuts if you do the sort. So, anyways, given that system, I'm going to give everybody some opportunity to put in the chat, email me separately, give you some time to think about it. We'll be checking in with the chairs prior to the next Slack meeting, and I'll work with Derek on talking about some tours and getting some more information about the sort out to folks. But rather than continue to go into this with this fresh in your mind, I have to close it, but I am going to turn it over to Doug Drennan, who I think some of you have met. It may have been a while, but Doug Drennan is with J.R. Miller & Associates. I don't know what the JR stands for, but it is JR Miller and Associates, and they have been, Doug is the project manager, has been working with his team and with Mike Davis, the project manager on our end, on completing the study. So I'm going to turn it over to Doug, and then Mike will be on the call also to help answer any questions. So thank you very much.
Hey. Can everyone see the screen?
Not yet, Doug. I think I stopped sharing. You may have had to wait till I was done, so I don't know if you want to find that again. The other option, Doug, is I have the presentation that you sent earlier. I could pull it up and you can instruct me to click through slides.
Well, I've got this right here. I think I somehow signed off here on screen. You got me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes. There, oh.
What happened?
We can see the agenda, and then you need to switch.
All right, I know. So now I got to get off of that. Can you see this screen?
Still have the agenda.
still have the agenda?
Correct, yes.
August. Let me try to get back into sharing screen. You see slides now?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Thanks, Doug.
There you go. Now you see a summary of phase one?
Yes.
All right, good. I appreciate everybody. I'm Doug Drennan. Just a little background. I've been in the solid waste industry about 40 years, so it's been a while. Jared Miller is a firm that specializes in planning, design of facilities. That's what we mostly do. And it stands for Jim Miller. He's the owner of the company. But our responsibility on this project is to do a full assessment of the solid waste system. And we'll go through the agenda and our scope. And so far, we've produced what we call phase one of the findings and recommendations, and that's what we're going to review today. So I'm going to turn this over to you quickly, Travis, to just make some statements on the system plan and expectations from today.
Yeah. So today, we've given this presentation. Doug has given this presentation once before, and we are planning after this to go to our council. But today, the goal is to provide our commission members with an overview of the study findings and gather feedback to help direct phase two of the project. So today, we're going to be focusing on some of what the capital improvements are going to be at the three transfer stations that we talked about a little bit ago, what improvements need to be made physically related to those transfer stations. And then the real focus for today and what we really need from our SWAC, users of the system standpoint, is there are some non-capital options for our system with the primary focus of improving traffic at the central transfer station, as well as improving traffic and future growth at all of our transfer stations. So when we focus on those, what we'll be wanting to get from is, as users of the system, how do you feel like the non-capital improvements that we are going to be putting forward, that J.R. Miller is going to be talking about, will address the issues, and what negative impacts do you see on you and other users of the system? So without getting into too many specifics, I guess my question would be, once we have looked at all of the recommendations, what do you as users of the system feel address the challenges that we have in our system right now the best? And is there anything that is presented that is an absolute no-go for you as a member of the public that engages with our system? And our next steps are to, A, take this forward with your feedback and make recommendations on how to move forward with implementing the improvements, and take that to our solid waste advisor, or sorry, you are the SWAC, our Clark County Council, because at that point we will have engaged and gotten feedback from our steering committee members, which are the public works directors for each of the cities and town, and then we will have engaged with you as representatives of the public. So this will both feed into the outputs of this, your input, as well as all the other input and the guidance we get from council, will feed into how we enter into negotiations with Waste Connections for the next contract, how we evaluate the options that we have to purchase the transfer stations. It will feed into the solid waste management plan update, and will start to develop guidance for phase two of this project, which is a lot of design and implementing the design work. So, and my expectations, this is going to be a lot of information. I know I'm one of the worst at this, so just please help us stay all on track. Ask questions and speak up if you need something clarified. Again, we've been dealing with this study for years now, or at least a little over, well, I don't know, I don't want to sound too dramatic, but we've been fully ingrained in this project, and everything that we talk about here might make sense to us. So please ask if you need something clarified. You're all very good, but make sure that you test assumptions, or if we give a reason for something that you don't feel like we explained, please ask. And then just be open with what you need as a resident. You are all here to represent your residential area or your customer base. So just please be open and ask questions. And we may need to talk about this more. If we get to a point where we are still asking questions and we need to find another meeting, we will do that because it is very important that we get good quality feedback on this project because it's big. So that's my thing. Thank you.
What we're going to cover today is we did the introduction and the meeting goals. So we're going to overview the regional system. Some of that Travis already covered, so I'm trying not to be redundant. We're going to talk about the purpose and overview of the study and what it all entails. We're going to review the specific chapters in the Phase 1 report and share with you some findings and address questions. Like some of the stuff, there's not formal recommendations at this point, but this is background information for you as we proceed to further complete the studies. So with that, I will tell you, as I walk through this, we were at 7 o'clock. It takes about 45 minutes to get through this. I will tell you that I appreciate if you – we've got pauses in the presentation for you to ask questions. So I want you to be aware of that. If we can stay within those pauses, that will help keep things on track. It worked pretty good with the steering committee, so I'm confident it'll work pretty well here. I'll try. There's a lot of slides with a lot of words. I'm not going to read every word. Travis will make sure you get a copy of this. So I'm going to do the highlights of it. And hopefully that succinctness will allow us to meet our schedule, but at the same time give you the information for moving forward. So let me give you just a background overview. Again, many of you might know this. This all started in 91 with a 15-year agreement with Columbia Resources to a wholly owned subsidiary of Waste Connections of Washington. And the services provided are, you know, barging the waste to the Finley Buttes landfill and also owner and operator of transfer stations. At the time this project began, or this contract began, the West Van transfer station was built and the barge loading facility to haul garbage. And the central transfer station and recycling facility, I think, opened up in, there was a small transfer station, but it was expanded in 1992 or 94 or something like that. So those were the two primary facilities. In 2006, the contract was amended for two 5-year extensions. Principal extension was resolved about making capital improvements of building a transfer station in the east part of the county, the Walsh Siegel Transfer Station. It opened in 2009. Also, there was the movement to install the MRF equipment, the Material Recovery Facility at West Van. The contract provided for 2 5-year extensions, the first one until 2021, which allowed these improvements to be made and amortized by Waste Connections. The second 5-year contract is extension is being executed, and the county has notified CRC of their intent to extend till 2026. The original contract had a condition of buying the transfer stations if the county notifies them by 2025, and as part of that, the city of Washougal can also exercise the right to purchase the east transfer station for, these were $1. Again, my understanding of the history of this is that the system was fully amortized and paid for, and the county and the city and from the original agreement wanted that option to purchase the facilities. So with that provides a sort of a background of where we are. So since those first agreement, the population in the state is, or in the county, has grown by 105%. As a result, about, most importantly, from 1992 to today, 173,000 tons went up to 350,000 tons. Most significantly is during this time, other than the transfer station at Washougal, there have been no major improvements at these facilities. They have Waste Connections done a good job of adhering to the increased traffic and operations, but by and large, these facilities are due for some updating. And that's what we'll talk about. As part of this regional study, it was not only looking at the contractual arrangements, we did assessment of the infrastructure and conditions assessments. We did a review of services and programs, which we'll comment on. And there was also a very detailed cost of service study. So we're looking at finances, the condition of the facilities, contractual arrangements, and the services, and how they can all work as a system. So in the regional study itself will be a completion of the financial review of the cost of services and the financial needs of the system. We completed a physical condition of the city. In other words, what condition are they in? Do they need major improvements? What is the infrastructure replacement needs? We also did an assessment of the operational conditions. The fact that they're handling, you know, more than two times the garbage that they had. What needs do these facilities have to handle traffic and also the waste volumes? Policies that we were asked to look at, Travis alluded to it, was how do we look at certain policies and programs that could either levelize or reduce traffic at transfer stations or actually improve overall services. So these are the guts of the plan. The results will be a production of a 20-year capital improvement facilities for these facilities, and they're pulled into a business and financial plan for the future. And where we're at now is this is the phase one study, so there's still work to do, but we're right now engaging the SWAC and the steering committee and getting input on these findings from this first phase. So the first phase study, these are the chapters that we did. We'll cover the growth in population and the waste generation needs of the future. We'll look at those policies and programs that could improve operational efficiencies. We'll do a review and summarize the operation conditions. And then one of the key things of the study is the CTR, the Central Transfer Station, which bears a lot of the responsibility. I think it handles 60% of the waste. What are the options for serving the North Area County? Additional reports that have been completed is the we got a draft capital improvement plan, but we're still engaged in discussions with Waste Connections on what those improvements may be. We've also completed a feasibility study for the MRF. It's in a draft form. We've also done supporting technical memorandums on operational structures or potential structures for public ownership, which includes different arrangements for institutional arrangements, as well as the financial study. We're not going to go into those today, but we're going to, because those are going to feed into what's phase two. Phase two, what we're doing now is we're working with both Waste Connections and the county to complete the facilities plans. That is doing more detailed analysis of the physical improvements, and then we will be tweaking that capital improvement plan to update that to what the final improvements might be over the next 5 to 10 years. And then that will fold into updating the financial plan. That's phase two work that's starting right now. It's been undergoing for about a month and a half. Phase three work is the update of the comprehensive plan, which will incorporate the findings from this report and complete evaluation and recommendations on the ownership. So that's the status of things now. And so let me start with the findings and recommendations of the first part, which is the background and population. Then we'll stop for some questions. So I told you that already we've increased since the original facilities were built to 350,000 tons. We're seeing the population growth projected by the Office of Financial Management to 643,000 people by 2040. that Clark County, as you may know, is one of the fastest growing areas in the state. More importantly, the tonnage will increase by an estimated 130,000 tons in the next 20 years, or a 33% increase. On the right of this map, you'll see we've cited the three transfer stations, and we've speculated on the general service area, the Washougal service area, which is shown here in brown. The Rose area, red area, is the West Van, and the largest area is served by the Central Transfer Station. Obviously, population growth in the Washougal East County is limited by two sides. You got the river and the Cascade. So, looking at the county's growth management plan, most of the growth is expected in these crosshatch areas. The cities of Battleground and La Center and Richfield are expected to double in population up here in the north. And then you've got a lot of growth occurring in the sort of the mid county area here, which is going to be in the urbanized county area. So when you look at the potential growth and impacts, almost 60% of that growth is expected to occur and flow into the CTR. So in our job, we're looking at the current condition of facilities, but we're looking at how the facilities can handle this growth. So with that, I'll stop and see if there's any questions the committee has on these background assumptions.
You know, Travis, this kind of brings up the point of, what kind of workshops or whatever we might want in the future. And I guess I'm looking at this map, I'm thinking, well, does Waste Connections collect in La Center? Do they collect in Battleground? Do they collect in Richfield? I guess I don't even know the full extent of the service area.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely something we could dive in on. They service the entirety of the county. Okay. And then they have some of the areas around the county. Derek, you can definitely expand on that better than I can. But yeah. I can note that as a point for future, you know, service level area would be a good, yeah.
Yeah, we have collection contracts in Vancouver, Camas, Washougal, and Ridgefield, and then with the county for recycling and yard debris. And then everything else is dictated by the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. And so it's pretty much bounded by the county, but we do some work in Cowlitz County up in the northern regions just because we have better access to it than the neighboring UTC certificate. We don't do woodland cutout up there because that's part of the northern UTC thing, but and I think we maybe go a little bit into Skamania at some points, but for the most part, it's all Clark County is stuff that we collect.
Yakult and Amboy and Shalachie Prairie. And,
yep.
And so you go up there and pick up garbage and haul it all the way down to the central facility.
Yes. It's a long drive. Long drive.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're that little green truck that was driving all the way down to central.
Yeah.
We go up to Cougar and the parks up there on the lakes. We do all the lakes on the northern side of the county, and we do it on the north side of the lake, which is technically Cowlitz County, but we're the closest hauler, so that was allotted to us back in the day when the UTC cut things up.
So, Doug, your growth areas seem to show a lot in Vancouver urban area, not as much as I would have expected up and down the I-5 corridor. Where did that information come from, anticipated growth areas? Are those UGA reserve areas, or where are they from?
The urban growth plan, the county's urban growth plan.
Okay.
Yeah. So we crosshatch them. Yeah, there's. If you go back to it, let's see here. It's hard to see. There is quite a bit of growth along the I-5 corridor too. Personally, I live over here by CTR, and I can just tell you this area here east of 205. And west of the 503 there's substantial growth going on in there. So that's getting very urbanized. But you can see that all of this area, including in the Salmon Creek area, is also expected to grow. What surprised me is how much growth Battleground, Richfield, and La Center are. There's like 35,000, 36,000 people, and that's expected to be over 70,000 people. And that's the state's numbers. And like I said, the crosshatch areas are provided by the growth management plan of the county.
Which doesn't show anything in Richfield, which is surprising.
Well, you can see some areas here that maybe they, it's just the map is small.
That's La Centra. Yeah, that's just around the I-5 corridor at La Centra.
Well, it is growing, so maybe that's within the – these are extensions to the urban growth boundaries, so what maybe that growth is infill to the city. Okay. So one of the first things the county asked us to do is to take a look at, you know, we have a lot of traffic going to CTR. It's fairly significant. It backs up on the Highway 503, but basically the county has asked us to take a look at all of the kind of regulatory policies or programs that we might do to enhance services and possibly impact that. The one thing I will say here is we've done a lot of study on this. I wish I could say that if we press this button or do this program, we could reduce traffic by 30%. The fact is there's no specific data that says you do this and you're going to get this result. With that said, we did a lot of work, and there are implications of doing these programs that will impact and improve services. One is the universal services. Universal services here are provided by most of the cities, but not in the urbanized area of the county and not in the city of Battleground. So as we see this urbanized area of the county getting more growth, the question to the county has been considering universal service or requiring cities or residences and apartments and even business to subscribe to service. It's common practice, and it is expected to reduce traffic. The second thing that we learned is that somewhere around 50% to 60% of the traffic going to these transfer stations are hauling less than 400 pounds a day or per trip. So as a result, if you look at their cost that they're paying, they're not covering their cost of service. I mean, to go in there, they pay $5 a fee, and if they got less than 100 pounds, they may pay $10 a total. The cost of running that service is much more than $10. The fact that car is coming in there, it may cover some of the cost to transport and dispose, but it is being subsidized. The cost of that is being subsidized by those customers that use the collection system. And so how do you look at this and say, how do we normalize this? Well, so we did a survey of transfer stations all through the Northwest. Most of them have adopted a minimum fee of anywhere between $18 and $30 per vehicle. The reason being, each vehicle and the cost of handling that vehicle, whether they have 100 pounds or 500 pounds, is equivalent to about that cost. Normally, they set a minimum rate of 300 to 400, 500 pounds. We looked at the cost of service within the county at the transfer stations, and an equivalent fee to handle 400 pounds is like $25 a ton. So it doesn't matter whether you have 100 pounds or 400 pounds. You pay $25. You're now paying your cost of service to handle that material. So that's a consideration, is putting a minimum fee here, similar to what all stations that we surveyed in the Northwest. Second thing we looked at is a lot of things on Sundays. The only transfer station that's open is CTR. And one of the things the county said, could we expand hours at West Van and Washougal, particularly on Sundays, to self-haul? And would that have an impact? And it probably would, because if that's the only thing open, it's centrally located, and it's not unrealistic to see people from other parts of the county use it. So recommendations out of this as part of expanding the solid waste management plan is further evaluation of adopting a universal service program for those areas in the urbanized county, and working with City of Battleground possibly to adopt a program. And again, the purpose of doing that universal service has some implications on the collection, but it has other implications on just being more efficient. I mean, the collection system's being offered there. Why not try to maximize and incentivize people to use it? One of the other things that we talked about earlier was the bulky waste collection. There is bulky waste collection offered by Waste Connections. If you look at the cost of that, it's not attractive, but, you know, they pay their cost of service. One of the things to do is expand the collection franchise to include those programs. Earlier, Rich McConaughey or Julie, or I can't remember, talked about the city's program for this. And so possibly look at how we can offer that service and so that people don't have to take their furniture there and use up the transfer station for that. So, and the second part of this is to adopt the minimum fee for paying the actual cost of services. So these were recommendations that the county has and through the study have forwarded to for review. So I'll stop for questions.
Hi, this is Kyle Potter. What are the current rate collections for cell phone? Maybe Derek, you can give us a little bit of info on this. But what is the? There's a minimum, you know, tip fee to go in for cell phone, and then a tonnage fee. Can someone give me an idea of what the fees currently are?
Yeah, it's a $10 transaction fee plus weight. So as Doug mentioned, it could be, you know, slightly over $10. We were amazed at the number of people who bring in a $20 or 20 pound bag or load.
Yeah, so my next question is, do we have like a mean and, you know, average or median, you know, bill coming through the facility? So we get, I guess my idea is like, how many people are truly just self-hauling every week, you know, versus how many people are doing some. I can only speak for myself, you know, I've been doing a big project around my house. So I've been to the transfer station twice in the last month. You know, how many people are like that where I only go twice a year, but it's back to back versus, you know, someone going in every week with their, you know, 20 pound bag of garbage. Can we see what the median transaction fees are so we get a better idea of that?
Yeah. One of the things we're looking for from you today is a recommendation to continue to review this and provide you further information as part of the overall solid waste management plan update, because, you know, staff are recommending that we review this further and potentially implement it. But we have all that data from Waste Connections, and Doug's done all the work on that already.
But to get to your question, Kyle, we do have the transaction. We don't have the ability to say, you know, who comes in how frequent. But we do have a good record. Waste Connections provided that data of how much waste is and what their load limits are. So when you can look at that, there's a lot of people that use that don't have a lot of waste. And if you have a $25 minimum, certainly the intent is for two things. One, some people might get the realization that I can pay $22 a month to get weekly service. And that's probably a better deal than going to the transfer station. And certainly that's better for everybody. And then somebody, the other people might get the incentive that maybe I won't go as frequent. So either way, there's some thing. But bottom line, I think to keep in mind is an equity issue. And we've faced this issue in a couple other facilities, other locations, other jurisdictions. And the thing that caught their eye is that those people using that facility aren't paying their true cost. The other thing that is, I mean, I live near the station, and I can tell you Patton Parkway can look pretty messy sometimes. And I bet you I could track that to the transfer station. Even though the transfer station has a policy of covered loads and all that, some people aren't as good at securing those. So these have other ramifications that are beneficial to the neighbors. It's the same with the universal service. Most communities adopt that certainly as a way to encourage neighborhoods to keep clean their neighborhood and not pile up junk. And so subscribing as a requirement is a way to reinforce that. So these are secondary policies that are impacted, I mean, secondary impacts that aren't totally evaluated, but certainly mentioned as part of these studies.
Real quick. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, I was just going to say, I'm sorry, this is just my personal opinion, but I know that one of the big things, especially at Central Transfer, is throughput really is the limiting factor, you know, getting cars in, getting cars out. And myself, you were mentioning about, minimum charge plus weight. I've got to be honest with you. I'm thinking along the lines of minimum charge, and let's call it $60 for 1,000 pounds. And what I'd be tempted to do is say, okay, you get two lines. You can either weigh yourself and pay, $60 plus tonnage, or $60 plus whatever's the excess of that. Or here's your second line, no scale. Give us your credit card as you come in, free leave on the outbound side. And there you go. It would encourage people to bring, fewer loads with more in it. It would free up your scale, because I know that's a huge bottleneck, is it not? And what I'm seeing is there isn't a real reason, to have people coming in and for a $12 tip fee.
Well, Joe, we're going to talk about the traffic and those issues. So your comments are well taken, and this needs to be further concerned. But those were good suggestions to consider. How much should that fee be, and where? Like I said, I wish I could point to a study that says if you do this, you're going to reduce it by 25%. But the physical limitations of the facility we're going to talk about in a bit. So, but Mike. You got any more comments on those proposals?
Well, and like Doug said, what the idea is if you guys are agreeable, and we will continue to bring you additional data on this and show you the numbers, what people are bringing, how much revenue that brings in versus, commercial, to show you the subsidy. It also, show what other folks are charging for minimum fees, so we can kind of come up with, what's going to be a reasonable sell to the county commissioners or county council, as well as the public.
Yeah, I think I would say one story I have is, we went to City of Battleground a number of years ago, and they were looking at mandatory service or universal service for their residents. We showed the council members the cost, pretty rough way, but the cost of coming to the transfer station every day, or not every day, but I think once or twice a month versus curbside service, not to mention you can get a broader range of services at the curb. There was pretty significant sentiment from that group that people didn't want government telling them what to do. They wanted the freedom. There's some allure to going to the transfer station on a Saturday. I'm not sure what it is, but people love to do it. Doug loves to do it, apparently. He's over there every Saturday. But there's a lot of that sense. And so whichever direction we go, I think we all know that this makes complete sense, right? But the politics involved in it are extremely challenging, and there's got to be that political will to make it happen as well. And we have good relations with county council. We can certainly make that happen. And I think it's something that makes complete sense, though. We need to move forward on it. I mean, my biggest concern at CTR is safety. Somebody's going to get killed out on Highway 503 at some point in the next couple of years, and we've lucked out to this period of time, but it's going to happen the way the traffic, it's just crazy out there on any kind of busy day. So,
yeah. By the way, that was going to be another question I had. So you guys, you'd use the term universal service. That more or less means compulsory service. Is that correct?
It's a clever way of saying mandatory service.
Okay.
Joe, you get the prize. There was a prize for whoever figured that out, Joe, so you get it.
I want to move forward. We have a half an hour, and so we're going to get to some of the meat and matter, Joe, about the condition of the facilities. I'm going to try to go through this quickly. I have 30 minutes. Is Everybody, is this timed out at 30, exactly 8 o'clock, or are we prepared to go a little extra if we need?
We pay for the pro version, so I think we paid for like an extra 5 or 6 minutes. No, it'll keep going as long as we need it to, Doug, but we'll try to.
No, I know, but I'm thinking about other people's time. I just want to be, I can be brief, and but there's a lot of material to cover, and so I'm going to walk through it pretty quick, but we, again, have time for questions and answers.
This is our one chance, Doug. We only meet every quarter. If I got to stay till 8:15, I'm happy to.
Well, listen, I'm just being respectful of your time. Okay, so we're going to go to what now is chapter 4 of the plan, which is really looking at the condition assessment, identifying the needs, and selecting the improvements of each of the facilities. So let me start with West Van. This is what the facility is. You can see here we've labeled all the services here. This is a 50-plus acre site. There's a lot of stuff happens. There's the main transfer station building. Then the MRF is in this building. In addition to that, we have the public recycling drop-off center here, HHW, and there's the wood yard in the back. So this is the main central, this is a valuable resource to the county. It serves the greater Vancouver area. All the waste here is then placed into containers and compacted and transported to the dock about a half a mile away. Material recovery facility is the main processing for all the commingled recyclables. It receives about 400 tons a day of garbage, another 210 tons a day of recyclables. It's open every day for the public except for on Sunday. When we did a full condition of the facility, the look at the structures and everything, it's in fair condition. When we say fair, it means there is some damage to some internal columns, but nothing that's severe. And I think Waste Connections is in the process of moving forward with those in the next year or so. Support structures are in good conditions. So overall, there's no major physical improvements necessary. From an operational standpoint, the facility does have, it has the capacity. If traffic backs up, they can handle it on the site. Inside the building, they've started the food waste collection, and so it occupies some of the floor space. The city pointed out that as that food waste collection program expands, there's going to have to be some more space needed for handling organics. We looked at the MRF processing facility. The MRF equipment is old. It's been retrofitted from year to year, and it's probably at its last legs in general. So we identified some improvement to the system by adding some equipment improvements. But long term, this facility cannot cost effectively handle materials. It's equipment that was put in 2008-09, the MRFs of today need to have a much better equipment. So we're looking at the possibilities of replacing the facility or the equipment at the West Van or possibly a new location. You say, why locate a new MRF? Well, this facility it's convenient to have it there because it's permitted. But at the same time, it's located further from where all the material is being generated. So if you were going to build a new MRF, you would centrally locate it so that overall system costs would be better. So there's no real immediate needs, but seeing how the MRF feasibility, depending on the results of that, would be good to look at a master plan for how these facilities can be used to serve the community at all in the future. While Shoe Gulf Transfer Station is located a little over 6 acres, this has a recycle drop-off. As Derek had mentioned, that all the facilities have recycling capabilities. The scales, the transfer station is rather small to handle the public. Right now, they only open 3 days a week for public. And when they're open, there's, jousting for space. The haulers have to come in on the side. There's not enough loading, self-loading. Right now they can get by, but in the future they're going to have to do something. So it handles about 125 tons a day. I think it was mentioned in the system plan that all the material used to go to West Van to be transported by barge, but now because of the Wasco landfill is owned by Waste Connections, they can take trailers directly there, which saves money. So it's, like I said, only open for the public 3 days a week. Overall, the condition of the building is good. We identified some minor improvements to improve handling and maybe create some surge space on the floor. I'm not going to go through those. The main thing here is item three is that in the next 3 to 5 years, you're probably going to expand that building to be able to have enough stalls for the public to dump and also have enough space for the commercial waste coming from both from the city of Camas and from the Washougal and the other areas to dump. So Washougal will need some improvements. Big elephant in the room is the central transfer station and recycling facilities. You can see here that it's got a scale complex. There's a rather short distance, even on this Google Earth map. You can see traffic backed up here in the left turn. This is the original transfer station. It was built in 94. Here's the compactor unloading, and here's the recycling center. There's property in the back that is not part of this facility. It's owned by Waste Connections. They do store containers, and they do stage their trailers back there. So that's the existing facilities. It's open 7 days a week. It serves the largest area. In fact, 66% of all garbage generated in the county goes through this station, which is 800 to 1,000 tons per day. And quite frankly, as we all can expect, this facility was not designed to handle this much material, nor was it designed to handle this much traffic. Currently, as Derek mentioned, they're moving to modify the entrance. What that's going to do is it's going to add two inbound lanes so that people turning left aren't competing with the right turn to get into the facility, okay? So that will reduce some of that safety problem of right now the left turn and the right turn have to compete for when there's a stall open or when there's queue space. So having two inbound lanes will at least provide better access. Then they're coming out of the facility is only going to be a right turn out. You won't be able to turn left. And that took a long time, and kudos to Waste Connections. They got it agreed to by the state WSDOT to allow that improvement. But the facility's been well maintained. It's in good condition. They've done there are some minor repairs that we acknowledge, but nothing severe that impedes the condition of the building. The current facilities, there have been no major improvements, so you can imagine handling is much more of the material that they have. They need to make some improvements. And then when you look to the future, we're expecting anywhere from 60 to 75,000 tons more, 300 tons a day coming in here, plus for traffic. So right now, there's on a weekend day, you have 900 to 1,000 vehicles. So we need additional scales to get inbound, outbound traffic. We need queue lanes. We need more stalls. Increase the load-out capacity. All these conditions have been identified. I should say that we've reviewed these conditions with Waste Connections. They've given us feedback on that. And we all agree that some improvements need to be made here to expand this. So one of the things that we want to do is evaluate how much money should you put into this facility to meet current needs and Wells' future. And considering the growth in the north part of the county, are there other alternatives such as building a new transfer station or augmenting with a separate station? So we completed what's called the North Area Option Study. And in there, option one was to take and make major upgrades and expand the CTR to accommodate the volume. And we call it option one here. It's estimated to cost between $12 and $17 million. Option two would say, let's not spend all that money here at CTR. Let's improve the conditions as best we can, but look to build what we call a satellite transfer station in the northern part of the county. That station would be largely for the South Hall, but it could handle, you know, a portion of the commercial traffic up in the north part of the county. So when you add the cost of making minor improvements and building a new facility, it's in the same range as the option one. And finally, we looked at the option of just replacing CTR with a whole new station. Part of that is motivated maybe by we're going to put a lot of money in this facility. When it was built, there was in a rural community. Now we have houses and apartments on two sides of the facility. There's apartments that have been built just on the north side, and on the west side, a new housing development's going in. So it's now gone into a mixed use. There's storage units on one side, got the highway on the other, and then residential on the other two sides. So some people might say this is not a long-term solution. So we looked at all three of these options. First of all, the estimated cost to do option one and two were relatively the same, but the option three is the most expensive. Assume that you can find a new site. Option one and two do require us to expand onto a parcel, the parcel that's located on the west side that's currently owned by Waste Connections. And there's questions on, you know, the condition of that. Site from the soil conditions and all that, and that's being explored. But nonetheless, it would require some agreement to expand on that property. And then finally is make major improvements to CTR option one. We looked at the overall cost over a 20-year period, and that includes not just the capital cost, but the operating cost. And the option to make major expansions at CTR seems to be the lowest cost. It's about $4 cheaper than to building a brand new station because obviously there is going to be some additional haul costs because it's going to be further north. And so you're going to have to haul further to get to the barge facility, and it's going to maybe impact collection costs. Option two is almost $10 more per ton operational and capital because you're operating two facilities. So that's a rough cut of the analysis. Both two and three are reasonable solutions for meeting long term, but the difficulty is finding and permitting a new site, whether it be a smaller station or a large station. That could take up to 4 years or longer to get completed. System cost will be higher under option two and three. And the other thing I just mentioned is that you could mitigate some of the long-term residential neighborhood and the access off 503 by relocating under the third option. So we are now in the process. We've identified two options. We're looking at the minor improvements a little more, and there's some alternatives that we're looking at with Waste Connections. We're also looking at finalizing some of the options for the long-term investments. We're in the midst of preparing that under the phase two work, and once we get that detail, we would use it to work with Waste Connections in the county to identify what those final improvements are going to be. And so, that's where we are in this phase of the study. So that was a lot of work to cover in this. So I open it up to questions and answers.
Okay, Doug, quick question here. Al Juska, any discussion with hauling from the northern part of Ridgefield area and that into the College County area?
I'll let Mike speak to that. Because we haven't studied it in detail, but Mike has talked to them and explored that. Mike, you want to weigh in on that?
We have, and it's been very limited at this point. That would require us to go through more work with you know, county commissioners and get their approval of, in Calhous County. And it's, so it's an option to consider, but at this point, generally from planning standpoint, you want to maintain your own waste and keep it within your borders if possible. So we haven't totally ruled it out, but I would consider that a low-level priority option at this point.
Okay. The other question is, how about in your modernization of the burps, how will robotics work out with that? I've seen that done in Mesa, Arizona. Those pickers are really moving fast.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. We get into the MRF, but we identified about $4 million worth of equipment improvements that could at least improve throughput, improve quality. Derek might want to speak to, I know they've made some investments in this, and that has done some improvement. You want to speak to that, Derek? Is Derek gone? Okay. I'll show you this list, Alan, to respond to your question. My understanding is they have put a few robotics in, but the systemic problems at that MRF is it's got some older screening. The system has been, you know, it's like taking an old engine and adding different parts to it. It's just not efficient. So what we suggested is that we'll make some investments in these unit processes, possibly putting in some robotics and some optical sorting. Those pieces of equipment can then be utilized in a new system when it's purchased. So certainly they want to make some investments that will have the benefits that you mentioned. And we're fully aware of, I've been personally involved with doing three of the four major MRFs that are operating now on the West Coast with the most advanced technology. So it's a major investment to do that, but we've done the study, and it's going to be cost-effective in the long run to do that. So some improvements are going to be made to accomplish what you said, and further improvements to the system will be featured in the MRF feasibility study.
And Derek's back on. He got booted for Wi-Fi purposes, but he can speak to the robots that are in place now and at Waste Connections.
What was the question? Sorry, I missed it.
Alan was inquiring about the possibility of in our modernization or upgrades of the MRF, what role robotics will play. And I know that we've talked a little bit at past WEC meetings and have sent out the video as well, but just about the existing robots. But what about the future robotization is what Alan was asking about.
So my understanding is, you know, we have people in our company that, you know, their goal is to build a MRF that is fully automated with no humans other than to load possibly the system, and everything else is handled by mechanical items, whether it's robots or optical sorters or something else. So at some point in the not too distant future, you're going to see a fully automated MRF. Would it be this one? I don't know. But the four that we have are very effective and haven't called in sick yet, so so we're going to continue to go down that route and continue to automate things.
So, Derek, you didn't hear this. I told what I said, explained to people. We went through an assessment of the system with I can't remember his name, but Matt, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Matt, their MRF operator, and we identified adding some equipment, and you guys have moved forward with that to improve some of the efficiencies. And I explained to Alan that in the long run is to put in a fully integrated system that's automated.
So. Thank you.
I got a couple for you, Doug. You mentioned that if a transfer station is built in the North County, that expenses go up because there's further trucking to the river, right?
Part of it.
You're further away. And I'm wondering that doesn't balance. I mean, the garbage trucks that are picking up the garbage at people's homes don't have as far to go either, right? Because they're no longer going all the way down to Central. So that doesn't balance out.
Well, if you look at that map, go back to where we have, if you recall, CTR is pretty centrally located. If you start to move north, and also one other element is the hauling yard is located within, I don't know, 2 miles of that transfer station. So when those trucks get done at the end, they have less, very short distance to go to the hauling yard. So as you go north, you know, the main generation of waste is going to be from to that station is going to probably be from Fourth Plain up north, or even south of that a bit, all the way up north. And so trucks will have to go up to further than where CTR is, go back to their routes, go further north, and then come back to their loads. So that's the cost impact. How much it is, I think we did some reasonable cost. It may be like $1 million a year. So it's not a huge amount, but it will impact system costs. That's all we know. We haven't done that much detail. And, yeah, you will be hauling the waste slightly further. Now, so it depends on where it's located,
right, too,
and how close. So one of the other risks is trying to find a good site. There's already been a preliminary study done a couple of years ago. The idea of looking up around Ridgefield, right off the I-5, where it would be convenient to get on the freeway and haul that waste, that had some limited success in just identifying some sites. There wasn't a lot of desire to put something up there. But with that said, there is property up there, and it's but siting the transfer station is a challenge.
Yeah, part of Ridgefield seems like a decent area around there because you're not in residential areas then. What's the difference between building a transfer station and a satellite station? You call this a satellite station.
Well, we call it a satellite because in our world, most of the commercial waste could then go to the central transfer station and take advantage of being located centrally to their collection routes. And putting a second facility up to Northwood would allow a growing area to allow them to go to that facility and take that traffic off of CTR for self-haul. Also, it could be designed big enough to maybe accept some commercial. So you talk about a building maybe 25, 30,000 square feet. Now, if you put a main facility in there to replace CTR, you're talking about a facility of maybe 60,000 to 70,000 square feet. So that's the difference. A lot of the commercial waste could stay at the current CTR with minor improvements. The main problem we have there is there's not enough stalls for the public to jump to dump there, and that floor space is limited, so they compete with the commercial haulers that unload, and it just wasn't made for that volume of traffic and that volume of waste, period.
One more quick one, it might be for Derek. Are you getting complaints from the residential neighborhood about the CTR at this time?
Derek, leave us.
Derek was here, and I know Mike can probably speak to this, but we do get mostly during activity, construction activity, and then the one-off late night. But Mike, can you speak more? Most of the complaints come in and work through Mike.
I want to address the Ridgefield comment first, and we did look at the Port of Ridgefield when we did the 213 feasibility study, and the port at that time basically told us we'd have a very high bar to permit there, meaning we wouldn't get a permit. Their logic was the jobs per square foot that a transfer station would create. And we've just recently, you know, represented this information to Regional Steering Committee along with Ridgefield, and they didn't exactly jump out and say, hey, come on back here and build the transfer station here. So I think it's highly unlikely that we would get permitted there, but maybe, depending on the situation. complaints at Central, yes, we get them, but I surprisingly far and few, and most of the time they're neighbors about operations, not necessarily the traffic.
I don't know, Derek, did you have any, were you here for the question, or did you get booted again?
I was having some audio issues. Sorry, what was the question?
Just in general, the frequency in the, do we get a lot of complaints about Central Transfer Station from the neighbors?
Probably once a year, and it's typically less about daily operations and more about if we are doing some sort of random middle-of-the-night paving project. Every once in a while, we'll get some dust complaints from the backyard, and we have some, you know, things we put in place for that, but it's very rare that we get complaints. About with all the traffic going through there, only about once a year do we get a complaint. And we already got our one this year, so we're not expecting any more.
Well, I know this was a lot of material here. We're going to go through these capital improvements and show you what we're in the middle of studying and the costs, and give you some feedback on that. And I'll move forward. So one of our responsibilities is to do a capital improvement plan. We base this original, what I call draft CIP, on these preliminary studies that we're doing, and we're now moving in to hone those down and get this capital plan more succinct and dial it into exactly what we want to do. So this is again, we're looking at improvements over the next 7 years. Many of these improvements are because the system is in need of this, and it's just, you know, many communities. City of Seattle, King County, Tacoma, I can tell you I've been involved with in the last 10 years have been through the same situation of upgrading their facilities. And it's just time to look at it here. The idea is to get a schedule of these improvements so that we can determine the impacts on finances and look at the cost over the 5 to 7, 10 years at this point. So they show high probability on the cost because they're, you know, these are conceptual plans. So let's look at CTR. So this is just a schematic of what we are. In this turquoise area is the entrance improvements, which are now being done. What is planned in the future is next would be a phase two, which would be improving the back area here, the blue area. This is on the property that is not owned by the transfer station, but owned by Waste Connections. And the intent would be to put a scale back here. And so we get this long queue. And one option is to put a building back here on this back lot to load vehicles and handle the surge. And there would also be a loop around ramp up to the facility, the current facility, which is right here. So this improvement, the blue area, and some improvement in this red area would be what we call maybe the minor improvements. Another option is to spend money to expand the existing building. This building here is about 15 feet higher than, or 18 feet higher than this lower area. And there's some advantages to take advantage of that different elevation. So we could expand the transfer station, and that's one option that's being looked at. And finally, if all these improvements are made, one other flexibility is possibly to make some improvements in this entrance area, to use that space better and make the recycling facility and possibly reduce impacts to the apartment complexes here. So this is a very general schematic of those improvements. We've estimated the cost for doing the entrance. It's probably a little lower than $700,000. But in general, this is where that $17 million comes. And we would add possibly 26,000 square foot of building. We have another option, which is a smaller footprint that we're working out with Waste Connections now. So these are the major improvements that would do these things. It would reduce off-site queue. It would create additional floor space to handle the surge of traffic, improve the load-out conditions, and improve the number of stalls for loading out the public, for the public to unload and for commercial to unload. So it's a major improvement to handle not only the current conditions but the future conditions.
Up to how long, Doug? Your entire study?
Yeah, this would handle traffic up to the 20 years or so.
Okay.
Well, Schuylkill improvements I mentioned are pretty basic. There's some entrance improvements to just expand and make access to the HHW. This is something that Waste Connection identified. There's some internal improvements in this building that would provide a little more surge capacity and load out. The loadout chute would provide a little cleaner operation there. These are minor things that could be done. The big improvement would be to pave this area and to add on this secondary building. And in this condition, we would add these extra stalls for the public to unload. So it takes, you know, people would be able to back into here as well into this facility. This is a preliminary sketch, and there's maybe some other ways to do it, but once this is done, this would be able to, currently handles about 125 tons, so this would double the capacity of that facility. These improvements are that in today's dollars, it's about $1 million. So it's not as significant as what we're looking at CTR. We are going to do further refinement of this and work with Waste Connections to see there's some other ways to improve this that will, that might either cut costs, it might cost a little more, but it might be a better long-term solution. But on a preliminary basis, we're expecting to spend at least $1 million there. And at West Van, there's no immediate improvements here. The main thing we looked at is the MRF. And if the MRF were to be, if the MRF equipment were to be removed and relocated, that would provide almost 45,000 square foot of building available. And this kind of goes to the solid waste plan and taking a look at future programs, either yard waste or food waste, or expanding these different collection services that might generate need for additional space or different infrastructure at this facility. So if the MRF were to be removed, in the long-term plan, this could provide space to add construction demolition processing to recover more materials or handle organics or other possible services. So the decisions on what to do at CIP are largely hinge on what long-term solutions there are for the MRF. We, as I mentioned to you earlier, Alan, there are some equipment here that we notified or identified to be what we call stopgap measures to improve the operation at the MRF. This was these are things that can be added to the existing line to improve throughput, reduce labor costs, and also improve the quality of materials. Those were about $4.2 million. And most of these, some of these may not get built, but Derek already reported, they've added some robotics in there already. And the plan, I think, is to put also some additional screens in there. So these minor improvements are necessary, and they will improve the current system. But and some of this equipment can then be repurposed on the new line if and when that gets built. So overall, the findings of the CIP work is these are immediate and long-term needs of the transfer stations have been identified. We're doing this additional programming or facilities plans to sort of nail that down. We need to make a decision on the West Van improvements. That will rely on what decisions we make with the MRF. And one of the things we did is do a financial model of this. It appears that we have money in the revenue being generated to pay for these improvements. So we'll go over the financial improvements here. In the interest of time, do you want me to take a break here, or just I only have a few more slides to cover the finance? and we can cover those, or I can stop.
Finish them off.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
keep going.
So we took that CIP information, and as I said, we think there's enough revenue to generate in the next 10 years to pay for this. The current capital facilities have been fully depreciated. I mean, there's no long-term depreciation on the investments that have been made by Waste Connection. And so here's a cash flow model. We just took the CTR improvements. The money, you know, all of these things have to be phased in, because if you're going to make improvements at a facility like this, we got to keep it operational. So we've looked at the phasing of this construction over 5 years, and 5 to 6 years, and that's what's shown here. And also West Van improvements, these are equipment, and these are the improvements for Washougal. We got some early investments in, and then finally some larger investments down the road. In summary, right now, it looks like we would need on average about $7 a ton. This is a cash flow based on the current tonnage. About $7 a ton would have to go towards capital improvements on average. So the financial review that we're doing with CRC is still doing work on that. It needs further review. It appears, though, based on the current revenue generated with the rates, that we can support the expenditure of capital at these facilities. And once we get that more fine-tuned, we'll be bringing back to the SWAC that information. So with that, I'll throw it back to the committee for questions. Anything?
No. So no rate increases are needed to fund this. Is that what you were saying? Or kind of explain the financial ramifications of this again, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Again, Chris Bell is doing the financial analysis. He's worked with CRC, Waste Connections. And so the rates were based on that are generating now, generating revenue. Capital improvements that have been previously amortized seem to be now off the books. So as a result, the revenue that went to pay that appears to be available to pay for future improvements. Mike, if you want to say anything else on this.
Yeah, that's correct. And you got to remember, two things have occurred. Every year they get a CPI. Every year they've been paying down their debt. And every year the tonnage has gone up, except for that short period in the Great Recession. So this was based on tonnage, in 18-19, and we're screaming higher than that now. And so tonnage is everything in this business when it comes to revenue. And so basically, even if this is a blip somewhere, and we kind of come back down a little bit, there should be enough revenue to support it over this phased build out.
And does this, the fact that you're showing the table with these improvements, there's nothing in here about a Northside facility, does this reflect recommendations that are coming forward from somewhere?
No, in fact, we've got more to do at Central before we can make any final recommendations at that site, which would drive looking at another facility. It's just my concern is I led the planning, siting, and permitting for Washougal, and it was a 7-year land use process.
Yeah.
And it's just, as I mentioned earlier, we did this study. it seems like there's property up there, but when you really dig into it, it's harder to find than you think.
Well, I think what really caught my attention is when, you know, talking about the improvements at the central facility and the fact that making these improvements for $17 million or whatever it is will cover you for another 20 years. I mean, I mean, why not? Unless the neighbors or somebody are going to chase you out of there in 5 to 10, you know, if you really got room to do it there.
Well, and like I said, there's a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean,
we still need to do more geotech work for the expansion. And then there's always that, you know, then you get into land use, which is the neighbors.
Right.
So, I mean, there's always risks associated. Even if we were to make our recommendations, start to move forward with the process, we could get shot down.
And I
won't tell you otherwise.
Even if the neighbors aren't complaining now, if you get into a land use process for an expansion, they'll be there in force.
We're calling it an improvement.
There you go. Yes, that's a better term. Thank you.
and so that's a good point. I want to remind everybody, right now it's based on about a $17 million improvement. That could go up or down as we continue to work with finalizing these improvements. There's some geotechnical work that's done that could impact this, so treat this as a first cut, and we'll see what, as we proceed with these development of these options. We're completing an options report here in the next couple of weeks. We'll sit back down with CRC to review those, and so these numbers could go north or south of what we have. Same with Washougal. We could decide that there's a little different configuration. We could see that go up a little bit if we decide to make a longer-term investment there. But these are ballpark figures for what we've done so far. Just realize that phase two work is trying to hone in on that.
So we'll see in another 3 months or so with some refined information on this study.
I think, you know, so we're going to be kicking off the solid waste management plan pretty soon, and that's a much more intense, more frequent meetings with SWAC. So, I mean, I do see with some of the questions that you asked and the pace at which we're going to be going through engaging with council on some of these, you know, providing this information to council, bringing some of the questions, and also pulling together some of the data that you talked about wanting to know before you could fully make a recommendation. I feel like it might be, I would propose, and this is not just a cheap way out of the rest of the evening, but potentially a special meeting for the rest of this group to kind of sit on this information. We can share the presentation. We can work with your initial questions, your initial feedback, your initial thoughts, put together something that's a little bit more of a recommendation based on that information, plus what we get from the council moving forward. So I would propose, especially with the agenda items that we still have left that we need to get to, that potentially a special meeting might be an option in a month or so for us to pull together some more information and give you some more time to really process this, because one summary report probably didn't give you 100% preparedness for this, but you really needed to go through this presentation with Doug. So.
Yeah, this has been a great presentation. Really nice. Really appreciate it. When are you going in front of council, and with what information? Is this soon? Because Doug's saying the numbers are going to go up, or numbers are going to go down. How, you know, what do you present to them, and when?
Right now, we set up. You say when. We're working on setting up. We're just starting on setting up a work session to kind of share all of this information with them. It could be a month, it could be a month and a half or 2 months before we get any information, before we're able to sit down with them, just the amount of time that it takes right now to get in front of council with the limited in-person or the limited remote opportunities. So I think they're going to get an abbreviated version of what you all have heard. And we also need to engage with them a little bit more on the contract side of things, because a lot of what is in here feeds into how we go about that contract. So that's a big piece there too. So it'll be less focused on this. This will be more providing situational awareness to them, but seeking more information on, you know, just next steps in planning out this system and what that process looks like. So, yeah, so we're just now putting together an application for a work session to chat with the right folks. So.
So one of the things that I mentioned that was mentioned in the, you know, start of this was that one of the first things we'd like to tackle with Slack is a more in-depth review of the non-capital options to reduce traffic at the transfer facility. So I'm not, unless I'm mistaken, I'm not hearing any real angst against moving forward with that. I don't feel we need a vote. Am I correct in saying that everybody is pretty much in general agreement that we should try to move forward with that?
I did hear Kyle wanted to, I think there was a question about the ratio of, you know, people making self-haul loads and the size. I don't know, Kyle, if that was something you wanted to.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is we'd like to come back at the next meeting and provide more in-depth information. But it sounds like Travis and I may need to sit down and try to figure that out as well and then get back with the, you know, SWAC leadership on that.
Yeah, we've kind of separated the self-haul issues from the capital improvement issues, when really those two things are really linked, and understanding how you've linked those or not linked those. In other words, when Doug says we make these improvements at the central transfer station, that'll last another 20 years. Well, does that include these measures we put in place, these disincentivized measures we put in place to stop people from bringing so much stuff there?
Well, keep in mind that, you know, permitting anything in Clark County takes a long time. So going back to what Derek said, we need to start making some, you know, changes now. And I'm trying to get at least the minimum fee in place with this next rate cycle, which means, you know, we'd have to have that approved by August-ish, because we're going to need some time to, you know, unlike normal rate cycles where it's a buck or two, you know, if we're going to make major changes at these facilities, they're going to need to get that out. So, and we're going to need to run it through approval, you know, at the county commissioner level, and as well as a quick contract amendment to revise the rate structure.
So just one point to add to this. One of the advantages of the minimum fee that, and I know I witnessed this at the Seattle North station. They put in they have some of the same problem. They have a very short queue in, so they redid their facility. But one of the things they did is they upgraded their scale program to read cards faster, and they had a minimum. Well, one thing the minimum does is if you drive in, you pay your $25, and this happens at Metro down in, you pay $25, you go in, your transaction time going in now is maybe 30 seconds. Right now, transaction time is closer to 45 to 50 seconds, improving the transaction time. So you go into the station, you come out, you go on the scale, and you're 390 pounds. They get the net weight, and you're gone. You already paid your fee. So this, I mean, one of the things is we can't predict on how many people will stop using the transfer station, but one of the things that will impact just the operations is things like that. So that's another reason to do it. Now, we do have proof that works. We've learned that transaction time can be improved. And if you take that transaction time, it's just like opening a valve. You can open the valve a little faster. You can get traffic in and out of the facility. So that's one of the factors for doing this, as well as paying their actual cost.
Yeah, we could do just about a whole meeting on these options.
Yep.
And at least a large portion of one. So, like I said, let's cut this off right now. And unless I'm hearing it otherwise, I'm assuming that's what the SWAP wants us to do, is move forward with that option. And we will come back to you at some later date. I don't know if that's going to be, you know, when that's going to be. I'll leave that up to Travis to figure out with you guys, and we'll go from there. But it's getting to be 8:20 now.
So let me just end. There's a couple of summary charts here. I'm not going to go through them. I think Travis is going to send this presentation out to you so you can go back and redigest it. And certainly if you got other questions, get them to Mike or Travis, and we'll prepare responses to them.
You know, we'll get that out. I'll work with Amber on making sure that gets sent out sooner than the notes, since those take some time to process and check. So we'll get that presentation out to everybody. So I think, thank you, Doug. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for your questions, your engagement. I think you put a good couple of questions forward, and we will be in a good spot the next time we get a chance to talk about this on some actions. Kyle, I'm going to turn it back over to you, unless there are any other questions or comments. We're going to get it back to you for the agenda.
Okay, thanks. So we do plan on having a special meeting, just to clarify, on these questions and concerns that have been brought up about the capital improvement plan and all that.
If that is something, yeah, if that is something the SWAC would like, we can set something up. I need to talk to Doug and Mike about what is an appropriate amount of time in between, but I think sooner than 3 months, we can definitely pull something together. So.
Okay. All right. Next on the agenda, we have bylaws discussion. So I know Rich had sent out the bylaws. Travis, maybe since you have screen sharing capabilities, could you pull up those bylaws for us and we can have a discussion over some of the things that have been added and see if any of the members who haven't participated have comments, concerns about the updates we came up with between Rich and Tim and myself, and I think Derek provided some input too, and you as well.
Yes. Rich, could you, I have your email open, could you, which, I see the Word document, I'm assuming it's the draft, no, which document would you like me to open, Rich?
I think the PDF is Amber's latest changes to the bylaws.
All right. I'm opening that now, and we'll share that. All right, so you give me scrolling and movement instructions, and I will do so. But
okay, so this first page is just, I'll kind of just give a highlights of the things that we've changed. The first page we have here was mostly just some cleanup items in terms of our bylaws didn't talk about the, we didn't have the correct numbers listed. The SWAC had increased from 9 to 10 members, and so Travis, you can scroll down a little bit. So that was mostly just cleanup items on the first page. If you go to the second page, Travis. I don't think we really did much on page 2. It looks like more just language cleanup and some formatting. And Rich or Tim, feel free to jump in if I'm not covering something you think needs to be. So this third page here, we just added a section. If you guys, I don't know if anyone had time to read it beforehand, but we added a section because we kind of didn't have anything in the previous bylaws about subcommittees. So we added this section about how we would go about creating subcommittees, and then each subcommittee should develop a charter, which Rich and Simone kind of worked on for their recruitment subcommittee, and kind of that charter would basically spell out what the subcommittee is going to do, come up with some goals and plans for how about achieving those goals. Does that jive with you, Rich?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. And then, Travis, you can scroll down. So this a little bit more, Travis, just kind of stop at communications at the top. So we, I don't know, can we see that whole thing in one page? So we add, it's all right. This section on communications was added, basically we discussed how communications with TWAC members occur with, county staff and how, and the chairs and how, we would like it, the communication between SWAC members to occur just with the solid waste program managers. So that way we have one point of contact at solid waste, and the program manager can then direct that communication to the correct employee or employee group, so that the program manager is aware of communications between SWAC members, and then the SWAC chair is also kind of looped in. Basically just keeping the solid waste program manager and the SWAC chair looped on communications with SWAC members and county staff. And then we added some stuff about confidential information occurring, and just kind of how at SWAC meetings in public forums, you know, obviously we're going to get all that information to be public, but there may be other sort of subcommittees or other groups where we get information that may be, whether it's a private business doesn't want that information public. So just kind of keeping confidential information secure. Is that, Tim and Rich, is that about right on that section?
Yeah, that works for me.
Yep.
And then we added a section about just updating these bylaws every other year, just so we don't kind of get behind the eight ball like we did this last time on updating them, in terms of they were rather outdated. So just trying to kind of keep a better lid on updating them and making it a more regular occurrence.
So, we reached the bottom.
Yep. Any comments, questions, concerns about those updates from SWAC members?
I move that we adopt them then.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't sound like we have any comments, questions, concerns. I would, so it sounds like Alan has made the motion to adopt the updated bylaws. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, Tim seconds. Now comes the vote. So if we could get a raise of hands for yays. Okay, any nays? Not seeing any. It looks like has been approved. So we can move on to the next item on our agenda quickly, and I believe it was Rich talking about your charter language, and I'll turn it over to you. Maybe you can kind of explain, and maybe Travis, you can bring up that charter language again for us.
That would be the Word document, Travis.
Great. Thank you, Rich. You read my mind. All right.
And let me check also if Simone is on the line, has the mic there.
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Okay.
All right, Rich, you boss me around.
Okay, so remember the last time we looked at this, we had, it was a bit different. But we've come back now with it in the form of a charter. So hopefully folks have had a chance to look at that. And first section is the background, and then the mission and purpose. Below that, the authority. It references the bylaws that we just approved, so we would insert that date. And then it talks about the membership of the recruitment committee, and then roles and responsibilities of the committee. And again, the thought is that if we have like a policy legislative committee, that they could use a similar model, maybe a little bit different, but it would be an example that could be used to do another committee if we want to have other standing committees. And I think this was when this was done, we had also had some discussion, and I think I forwarded notes from a meeting in February that Kim had prepared.
Mm-hmm.
We were having some discussion and kind of in the middle of a advertisement. I'm not real sure where that stands, but this kind of lays out the general process that we had envisioned for the recruitment committee to really support getting information out to diversify who would be applying. I think the last time they went out to get candidates, you know, I think it was like late November, and it was out for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, during the holidays, during COVID. I don't think we had enough applicants to really pick any. So I think we still have, is it two positions, I think, that are out there?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you may be able to, I don't know if Amber is there. I know Amber worked with Marissa most recently on getting that last recruitment notification out. So we did open it back up, and we are still waiting. We've been bugging council to also deal with that appointment. I think we can appoint existing members for continuing, but we keep getting told that they'll get to it, but they have not yet. So, but yes, it's still too open.
Can you remind me which two seats you're referring to?
County at large, and then it's on the agenda. I'm sorry, I can't pull
it. North Clark County, so Steve's old spot.
Thank you.
Are the two we have vacant. And so, yeah, I think this would be a good up. I was going to follow up with where are we at on that recruitment, and are we in the middle of one? I don't really know, so maybe Travis, you or Amber could kind of
And aren't there two others who ended a month ago?
Yes, and what we found out was by approval of the council, we can reappoint those members if they are interested in remaining in their position, and we just need to make that recommendation. So we did get approval for that, and we've made the recommendations, but they have not yet added it to their consent agenda to approve those appointments yet. So the expired positions, I believe Simone, you are one, and was it Rich? I can't remember.
Derek. One. It's Derek, it looks like.
Derek, that's right. So
I received a letter of a reappointment letter.
Well, nobody told us, but congratulations.
Breaking news.
Thank you. I just received it a bit ago.
No, when Amber and I reached out maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were told that they hadn't added its consent agenda yet and that it would be added in the future. And apparently they did so, but we were not looped in. So I'm very glad that that is so. Can you check those boxes off, Amber?
Did you get a letter also, Derek?
Eric?
I did, and it was just dated 30/24 was my expiration date. So I appreciated the hope that I was going to live to be that old, but I returned it and had it edited. So I think I just got it back
today. We're going to have to get you cryogenically frozen then, Derek, because we're going to need you around in 30/23, I think.
Can't wait.
And then I would need to check the dates. Amber, I don't know if you have any more information, but I do know we just worked with Marissa to get out the press release, and usually we don't hear from Tina or the council's rep on applicants until it's closed. We don't know how many we get or who it is until it's closed. So
so is it open currently?
I believe it is open currently. I would need to double check on when we sent out that announcement. But there was a press release that went out. Amber, do you recall when that press release went out? Okay.
So part of the intent for the recruitment committee would be that as soon as you know that a press release is out there, let us know, and then we will work with others on Slack and do the plan to kind of maximize the distribution of that, other than just through the normal press release channels.
All right. Thank you, Rich. I'm going to forward. So I did just look. It looks like end of March, a press release was sent out at the end of March. So I just forwarded you that press release to Rich and Simone. I missed that part of the process. So it looks like it is still open, but I sent that to you. And if we need to start working on getting it out to some broader groups, let us know and Amber and I can help out.
Yeah, the third bullet from the bottom on what you're showing there kind of indicates that once we get that news release, that's when we like pull the trigger and we start to kind of jump into action, and we're only a month or two into that process, it looks like. So
I guess I'm the eye, you're the hand. The hand-eye coordination didn't work very well on that one. So you guys can pull the trigger now, but I'm a little bit delayed on telling the finger to do so. So that's not how I meant to say that.
Here it looks like the application deadline was April 23rd. So.
All right, so we'll reach out and see.
But we didn't have a charter adopted, so we missed the boat there too.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if people have had a time to look this over, if they want to do a little more look, provide input. But I think we probably missed the opportunity for the April 23rd deadline. But I think if we can get the charter adopted, and again, don't have to do that tonight necessarily. It could be at the next special meeting, but I'd like folks to kind of look at it. And I don't know if Simone has any other input, but I think that's the next step we need to kind of have, like, an okay from Slack to what the role of the recruiting committee would be.
So I would propose we adopt it tonight. I think that, I mean, I know you've been working on this for a while, Rich, and I think that people have had an opportunity to read it before this meeting. And if no one has any concerns or questions about it now, I would make the motion we adopt it tonight, and then we can maybe get some info back from the county council on did we get any applicants. And if we did, I guess we can move forward with that. If we didn't, we could maybe then spin up this process and get you guys more coordinated on recruiting some good candidates.
I would second that motion, and I would it would be good to just get it going and start working it. And then if we need to look at it again in 6 months or something, we can do that. But, you know, we're fussing around with all the language now. Let's start trying to use it, and then we'll know more about what's working and what isn't, what we follow and what we don't.
Anyone else have any other input on the recruitment committee charter?
And Derek, if you could go down, or Travis, if you go down just a little bit on what you're showing on the screen.
I get it. Short hair, red hooded sweatshirt. We're easy to confuse.
Yeah, yeah.
The WSU, though.
So that's the end of it, and then we would delete the pages after this. So really it's afterward, the approval and the date, the rest of that is like an earlier version of the bylaws. So go up a little bit now. And just the blue line, so we'll delete the blue line at the bottom of that page, and we'll delete the pages that follow. So basically it would be, we would just have an approved by, let's say Kyle would sign there, and we put today's date on it if you all agree that we're good to move forward. And then it can also be, changes to a revocation of this charter may be made by vote of the full SWAC. So if you all look at it in the next month or two and don't like it, we can just revoke it then too.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. I like what I kind of agree with Tim was saying. At some point, we just got to put in action, and then we can work out the kinks if we decide there are any going forward. So I'll make the motion to approve the recruitment committee charter as submitted. Okay, moved and seconded. Let's vote. Raise your hand for yays.
Yay.
Any nays? Okay. Seeing none. Approved. And I think it's the last item on our agenda after this long meeting. Public comment. Any public comment out there?
It looks like we have Elliot from the movie E.T. in Derek's spot. I don't know if he has anything he wants to say.
Be good is what he has to say.
Looks like all the public has left.
Yeah, I don't fault them for that. Sorry for the long meeting, guys. I know it was a lot to get in 2 hours, so we failed.
It was a good meeting. Really good presentation.
It was a good meeting. Yep, and we've got some more to chew on, so hopefully we can get a schedule for that special meeting to follow up on some of that stuff, and hopefully people can make that, and we'll look for some communication from me and Travis about that going forward.
Yeah.
Other than that, anyone else have anything to add? Travis, anybody?
I just want to say thank you. I know that we don't get together as often as would be ideal, but I, 40 minutes on a Thursday or Thursday, if you're really interested in, I just really appreciate it. And I'm very grateful that all of you are here and stuck around and really engaged with Doug's presentation. And I'm really grateful, Doug, for putting this together. We kind of caught him off guard, so we had to put this together pretty quickly today. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you, Amber, for all the help setting all this up. I know it's
been crazy. Thank you, Amber.
So thank you.
Thank you, Amber.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Good night.